Blog Talk Radio. I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Hundreds of Palestinian, Israeli, and international activists demonstrated in the West Bank city of Hebron today in a push to reopen a major market area. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society tells FSRN that more than 20 people were injured by tear gas canisters and rubber bullets after clashes erupted between Israeli security forces and protesters. FSRN's Lena Odgard was there and files this report.
In a campaign to reopen Hebron's former main market street, activists marched through the old city. Issa Amro is coordinator of the Palestinian group Youth Against Settlements.
We are here to ask to reopen Shuhada Street, which was closed before 19 years, and to remember the Ibrahimi Mosque massacres, where 29 Palestinians were killed by an Israeli retired soldier. And because of that massacre, they closed Shuhada Street, they closed all the markets in Hebron, and they closed many Palestinian apartments, so they destroyed the economy.
In a chaotic scene, protesters were met with tear gas and sound bombs from Israeli military, while young Palestinian men hurled rocks. One journalist was injured and taken away in an ambulance by Palestinian medics. Clashes also erupted in Jerusalem, Jenin, Nablus, Jayus, and in front of the Ofer prison outside Ramallah. Palestinians there have been rallying for about a week in support of hunger-striking prisoners. Lena Odgor, FSRN, Hebron.
One of those hunger-striking prisoners is Samer Essawi. This week, an Israeli court sentenced the Palestinian political detainee to 8 months in prison, meaning he could be freed as early as March. Late yesterday, Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi decreed national parliamentary elections would begin at the end of April in an effort to quell mass protests and political and economic turmoil in the country. But the announcement was not met with support from non-Islamist factions. Opposition leader Mohamed El Baradei protested on social media today that the decision, amidst severe societal polarization and eroding state authority, is a recipe for disaster. His group is threatening to boycott elections, according to the AP. A territorial conflict between the West African countries of Guinea and Ivory Coast has escalated in the past month. Troops from Guinea entered a town that had been under Ivorian control for decades. Last night, Guinea's foreign minister publicly claimed the city was theirs. FSRN's Karim Kamara reports from the capital, Conakry.
On Thursday, Guinea's foreign minister, Francois Fall, for the first time confirmed the presence of Guinean troops in the border town of Pieba. He said the strategic trade point belongs to Guinea and accused Ivorian security forces of illegal occupation. Fall added that the Ivorian flag has been brought down and the flag of Guinea is now flying over the town. According to report, local authorities in Pieba have fled to a nearby town. Many residents have also left for fear of being caught in a confrontation between the two countries. Sources close to the Guinean Foreign Ministry told FSRN that the foreign minister will travel to Ivory Coast Sunday for talks. The Ivorian government has urged the Guinean troops to withdraw immediately from the town to avoid confrontation. Karim Kamara, FSRN, Conakry.
The U.S. government's civil case against BP and the Deepwater Horizon oil spill disaster is scheduled to go to trial Monday in New Orleans. But there's also the possibility that the oil company will settle with the government. John Kostiak with the National Wildlife Federation says it's imperative that any penalty against BP must be high enough to make sure another spill doesn't happen.
Department of Justice has a responsibility to set a penalty amount that factors in BP's assets, which we know are nearly $300 billion, and the risk that they will continue business as usual if their bottom line is not affected by any settlement.
The Deepwater Horizon disaster in 2010 leaked an estimated 170 million gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico, making it the largest environmental disaster in U.S. history. Nearly 3 years after the spill, the full impact still isn't known, according to Brian Moore with the National Audubon Society.
The people of the Gulf do not feel like justice has yet been served. The damage caused to the environment is significant, and much needs to be done.
The first phase of the trial will focus on the causes of the disaster and who should be held responsible. In November, BP reached a $4.5 billion criminal settlement with the Justice Department. Just last week, Transocean, the contractor that owned the Deepwater Horizon oil rig, settled criminal charges for violating the Clean Water Act. Attorney General Eric Holder says the $400 million settlement will go towards protecting, restoring, and rebuilding the Gulf Coast region. And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter. Imperial war is a dirty game. I don't want to be a soldier, steal some other people's wealth, invade their homes and their nation. This is how I've always felt. I call upon the world's millions. No more war in our name. Stop this madness. Stop the killing. Stop the suffering and the pain. I don't want to be a soldier. Murder children in foreign lands. Bomb and terrorize all those families. So for peace, I'll take my stand. Bush's war is a dirty game. George Bush's war is a dirty game.
Thank you for listening to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Most of today's program is Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. The always entertaining investigative journalist, Greg Palast, talks about how to steal an election in 9 easy steps. And then after that, Climate Change is Simple with David Roberts of GRIS.
I'll tell you what. I'll start with Mr. F8. Who is F8? See, Citizens United. This election is going to be a $4 billion election first time. Under Citizens United, as you know, corporations are citizens. And just like, you know, America, you know, just like any other citizens, their kids can go to Iraq and get their legs blown off. Yeah. So who is F8? There's a group of billionaires. There are 37 billionaires having breakfast about 2 Fridays ago. I tried to join them. Well, I was hungry. I was in New York, 37 billionaires with Mitt Romney, but I didn't bring my checkbook. But who was there? The Iceman, the Vulture, the Snake. I didn't give them these names. Their happy bankers did. And, you know, but missing, I was hoping to run into F8 because, see, there is the 37 billionaires have an organization called Restore Our Future, a super PAC, which is backing Mr. Romney right now. And this super PAC of billionaires but had several $1 million donations. That's kind of the cost. That's what you pony up. That's just to bring the chips to the table. And so it had the Snake, Paul the Snake Singer. Excuse me, that was John the Snake Paulson, Paul the Vulture Singer. I don't want to mix the carcass eaters with the predators. but there's $1 million from F8 LLC. I want to know what F8 LLC, who's giving $1 million? So I look up, it's a limited liability corporation. I want to know who these guys are that are going to have this much influence with a possible president of the United States. And F8, I looked it up hard, it has sales of $80,000 a year. So I thought that the $1 million donation was pretty damn generous. But I want to, so then who is so generous? Who is F8? And I look it up, and F8, as it turns out, after some digging, is run by a Mr. Diego Villaseñor. Ring a bell, ring an explosion. He's an assassin. He's a killer, a drug dealer, and a character from Grand Theft Auto. It's true. And it's perfectly legal, if you think Supreme Court decisions are still legal. $1 million from that two-dimensional character. And then there's, you know, Charles Manson and Sons, the Zeta Gang, LLC, Al-Qaeda, Inc. As long as they got $20, they can buy your White House. Because that's what hasn't been mentioned. You don't have to breathe or be a citizen. They get to influence the game, but then some people won't. Let me just read you some numbers. We're going to get there. At the beginning of Billionaires and Ballot Ban, it says, how to steal an election in 9 easy steps. 767,023 provisional ballots were cast and not counted. 1,451,116 ballots were spoiled. How do you spoil a ballot? You leave it out of the fridge? What? Not counted. 488,136 absentee ballots. Hey, mail-in state, Washington. 488,136 mail-in ballots mailed in, never counted in 2008. It will be quadruple this year. Thanks, Washington. Okay, now, add it up, 2,706,275 votes were cast and not counted in 2008 election, the one that wasn't stolen. I know you think it wasn't stolen because the skinny dude won. That's not how we figure democracy in America. It's when, you know what democracy, definition of democracy is when you count the votes, okay? Not when you beat the vote thieves. I'm not here to support Obama or his mama. Don't care, okay? Frankly, it's not about whether one's better than the other. I just want the guy who gets inaugurated is the guy that got the votes. That hasn't been happening in America. We've gotten out of that habit. There's also purging, caging, rejecting. 3.7 million people showed up to the polling places, and they were not allowed to vote. American citizens, hey, that's 5.9 million votes and voters cast on account. Now, where do I get this? I used to be a statistician. You heard that first book? Didn't know about that one. That's published by the United Nations. I used to lecture at Cambridge University as a statistician, economist, and I just simply looked at the statistics at the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission. It's theft in plain sight. They not only keep records of who votes and how many people vote in America, they actually keep records of who doesn't get to vote in America, who lost their vote, and the number of votes that were just thrown in the dumpster. Once I started looking, the Republican Congress immediately removed all funding for the collection of those statistics, closed those offices. There's not one single elections commissioner serving right now. Now, of course, my colleagues here on this side of the electronic Berlin Wall in America could have looked, because, you know, there's that great investigative reporter, Yogi Berra, who once said, it's amazing what you could see when you look. So Robert F. Kennedy, Bobby and I looked, added up, calculated, and that's the official numbers. And here it comes. How does this happen? Now, if it was, see, they've known this a long time. There's glitches and gloops and stuff happens, you know. There's a tear, there's a mark on your ballot, doesn't go through the machine, you lose it. Your Chad gets hung. Okay, you know, Chad happens, you know. Okay. Whose Chads get hung? Officially, they tracked that one, too. U.S. Civil Rights Commission, Dr. Philip Klinkner, I worked with here, Harvard University, and he calculated for the government, and he said, the chance of your vote spoiling, that is, a glitch of the 1.4 million ballots out there that are glitched, the chance that you get glitched, that you get spoiled and not counted, is 900% higher if you're African-American than if you're a white voter, 500% higher if you're a Latino voter, and if you are an American Indian, if you're a Native American, forget about it. Forget about it. We don't give people smallpox, blankets of smallpox. We give them crapshootronic voting machines. They just don't count the vote. Okay, now, what that's called is apartheid, okay? It's Jim Crow in cyberspace, okay? It's, well, I shouldn't say Jim Crow. It's now Dr. James Crow, data analyst. How does this happen, and who does it happen to, and who did it? See, I used to be a detective. You can tell by the hat, right? I was an actual detective for the government, the big racketeering cases, right? And you know, I'm smelling this stuff. And I look at F8. I look at the cartoon with his $1 million, and I'm thinking, where does this begin? And I go, I remember this. Citizens United. Is anyone asking which citizens were uniting? Started smelling it, and it smelled like oil. So I remember, I go back into my files. I keep old files. In fact, if you read the other book, Vultures Picnic, you'll actually, and go to vulturespicnic.org, you will see Greg Powell's actual files, file cabinets. Touch the file cabinet, and they will open up, and you'll see my files. That's my favorite song. How'd you know?
Someone should cut it.
You can turn it off. Or you can't turn it off. Okay. Dancing pacemaker. Now, so I'm smelling the oil, and I go back to my file and pull out the files, and sure enough, I think back to Oklahoma, the Osage Indian Reservation. Oil is missing from the Osage Indian Reservation. It's like, you know, in the middle of nowhere, like, you know, a kind of Romney Olympics. And you have to, you may know that one. Middle of nowhere. People don't live too fancy in mobile homes, but they have to make a couple bucks from those stripper wells. You know, you see those metal horses going up and down. It's not even worth piping, so they bring in trucks. They had a contract with a trucking company, with an oil company, comes in, sucks the oil out of the tanks that have been sucking up little bits of oil, put down, you know, write down, okay, we took 70 barrels, but they take 80. They go to the next stripper well, they write down, they took 60, they took 70, and so on. So the FBI is filming this because it's a crime. Okay, now, it's oil rustling, theft on an Indian reservation, grand theft, larceny on federal property, racketeering. So I'm looking at this stuff, and we're following these guys back. We follow the trucks. We talk to the truckers, and we go back, and they're on a loading dock in Oklahoma. There's a big, tall, white guy, and he's saying, I want more, more overage. Overage is that extra, the 10 barrels, more. The guy standing there is named Charles Koch.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Now, what was interesting, my question was one word. Why? The guy was already, he was born a billionaire. Born a billionaire. You know, he got his money, you know, from dad who found the John Birch Society. He got the old fascist way, right? Born with a billion. So why was he taking a few bucks from some poor Indian families? And indeed, his one of his top executives asked him that same question. I know, because we had him wired. Sorry, I do get a little. I like my work at those moments. And so he asked the same question. Why? Why would Charles, billionaire, want 50 bucks worth of swipe $50 worth of oil from an Osage Indian family? And Charles said, and this is a quote, I want my fair share, and that's all of it. And that's how we begin that book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, because it's not two books. It's the billionaires who are the ballot bandits. Now, he wants all of it, but why does he need the ballot too? What's going on here? Okay. Well, I just said he committed a crime. FBI had tapes, films, you name it, you know? So why is he not in prison? So, question, the answer is, because if you, he bought, he has to buy the ballot. And he begins this way. He owned a couple of U.S. senators. Now, federal prosecutors serve at the pleasure of the state's U.S. senators. So the federal prosecutor for Oklahoma no longer pleasured Senator Don Nichols or nearby Senator Bob Dole. And so the federal prosecutor was removed, replaced with a Koch associate who immediately quashed. And here's, by the way, if you think that that, I kid you not, let's see if I can find, oh, there it is. There it is. They actually wrote up the indictment. There it is. Target 67C in the book. That's Mr. Koch. Koch Industries, theft, racketeering, enough to put you away from here to the 23rd century. Now, what happened? So they removed the prosecutor, replaced the prosecutor, disbanded the grand jury before they're allowed to see the evidence. They're allowed to see the evidence, and he walks. Okay, but that's not enough. That's not enough. Remember, they got all that oil and all those trucks. Well, what do you do with the sludge at the bottom? You dump it in rivers, of course. That's a cheap way. If you want it all, you're not going to pay to dump the oil in a and expensively deal with toxic waste, you're just going to open the spigot when no one's looking. Except we were looking. 350 cases of criminal pollution, acts of pollution, federal crime. Again, 350 cases of federal crime. That's a big chunk of change when you get caught, if not pokey time. So what do they have to do? See, one of the tricks you learn in Billionaires and Ballot Bans about billionaires, when they commit a crime, they decide, okay, they get caught. Instead of going, they go straight, not by stopping the crime, but by decriminalizing it, changing the law. They keep doing it. So they change the law. How do you change the law? Well, Koch would have to, you know, rent Congress for a while. So suddenly, now we're in the 90s, suddenly there's $25 million worth of ads that go in at the last minute before midterm election, and boom, Republicans are suddenly, for the first time in half a century, take control of the House of Representatives. Newt Gingrich, Contract for America. They needed to find some self-dealing little spider with a loose zipper to run it, and they found Newt. And they wrote him a contract. Contract for America. They took control of Congress. And the Center for Investigative Reporting said, it looks like the Contract for America was written for the Kochs to let them off the hook, change the laws, the deregulation laws, et cetera, would decriminalize their behavior. It looks like it was written for the Kochs, but they were wrong. That's not right. It was written by the Kochs. $50 million set up the Heritage Foundation, then they wrote it. Now, then what? Okay. So, but not all those laws, there was still that that indictment came down, 350 criminal acts of pollution. How could they deal with that one? Ooh, even with their Congress. And remember, they elected the Congress with there was a $25 million payment. But wait a minute, did I tell you that Koch and the payment were together? I didn't say a word. You're not paying attention. Now follow. The $25 million was spent by Committee for Our Children's Future, all against Democrats who voted for food stamps to elect Republicans who voted against them. Now, were there any children involved? No, there were no children. So who were protecting our children's future? Well, we don't know, and they accuse Democrats of such things as, in one case, they accuse a guy of constantly getting drunk and beating up his wife. It was true, but that's besides the point. So they also ran, they did some polling. They would call up people in Kansas where Jill Docking, the Democrat, was running for Senate, and they would say, going to vote for Jill Docking? Yeah, I think so. Going to vote for her if we told you that she was Jewish? That's the decay now. But who were the children? Who cared so much about the children? Because at that time, you couldn't have hidden donations to campaigns, and you couldn't have this is a not-for-profit charity for the children. Not-for-profit charity running ads that sure looked like they were political ads. Sounds like a crime. FBI's back on the case. Federal investigators back on the case. And it goes back, the money goes back. Can't find no children. They can find Triad. You'll see a chapter called The Hunt for Triad. Triad, we find Triad. What's Triad? Triad's the name of the Chinese money laundering gang, right? Well, there weren't no Chinese in this one, so back through Triad, which is a screen, and it goes back. Triad turns out to go back to Koch Industries. Now, problem. This crime was committed by an entity which cannot give money to campaigns, a corporation. And for a good reason, because we don't know who corporations are, right? Like I say, Charles Manson, Inc. But what if it was just CMI, right? Okay, now they've got another charge facing them. Criminal felonious use of a corporation and criminal felonious use of a not-for-profit for politicking. That's two different charges, two crimes. So what do? They have to come up with a Supreme Court that will make it not a crime, no more. All right, now, all right, fine. Supreme Court, Citizens United. Now, who's Citizens? They're a tiny group. Now, Citizens United, by the way, Foster Freeze, another billionaire who's in the Romney group, he gave a bunch of money to Citizens United, this charity, and every time he'd send a check, within hours, a check of the same size would go to a political candidate. And someone said, wait, that could be money laundering. That's another crime. What's going on here? So it ends up at the Supreme Court. Who is this little group that gets the most expensive lawyer in America, Ted Olson, to argue for Citizens United, for corporate giving? It's Ted Olson. Well, he was able to take a break from his day job as counsel to Koch Industries. It's okay. Not many Democrats complain, certainly not the Democratic Party, because their chairman, Bob Strauss, is a counsel for Koch Industries. Yeah, it's not about parties. David Koch was going to run for office himself for governor of Kansas as a Democrat. He ran against Ronald Reagan for president, calling Reagan a left-wing socialist in 1984. It's true. It's not about parties. Ken Langone, I want you to remember the name of that billionaire who was at that little breakfast. As he said, and he was, I'll give him credit. He said, I'm not making a donation to Mitt Romney. I'm not giving him I'm not making $1 million contribution. He says, I'm making an investment, like any other investment. The question is, what's the return? Okay. Now, how did the Kochs get out of it? You heard that I was doing investigations of nuclear power companies, racketeers. I want a $4 billion verdict against some scumballs you know what they did? It's hard to imagine this, but they faked the testing for earthquake proofing on nuclear plants. But don't worry, that will never have any effect. I was just on Japanese TV yesterday with that. That's in Vulture's Picnic, by the way. Chapter 10. Now, so I went back to my files. And I go, what happened? I call the investigations committee because you know what? There was a stand-up Republican name. In fact, you'd know him. Who watches Law and Order? Fred Thompson, who is who's the prosecutor, right? And I haven't watched it, so I don't know. What does he use any common phrases? Is there a special phrase that he uses, Fred Thompson, when he's prosecutor on? See, so he plays a prosecutor. He's an actor, and he was, you know, captain on a submarine, and he got carried away, and he thought he was a prosecutor. He was chairman of the Senate's Investigations Committee, and he said, oh, my God, look. He actually said, the Koch brothers, it looks to me like they've committed a series of felonies. Got to wake up pretty early, get ahead of Fred. The FBI saying, no shit. And he said, it's all over the place. But then he also wanted to call in a guy named Bubba Clinton and a lawyer named Hillary Rodham. What was that? See, I just told you about legalizing the illegal. That's the billionaire game, right? See, the Clintons, you'll read in the book, in their chapter called Manchurian Candidates, there's about $1 million that seemed to come from very far away that went into the Clinton campaign.
Uh-huh.
See, you're not supposed to take Chinese money. The Friati family, Indonesian family, Chinese, who are trying to cut deals with China for their nuclear operations, nuclear power plants, is all involved in a company called Entergy, a company that was sued by Attorney General Bill Clinton, but defended by a lawyer, Hillary Rodham, all in the family. Gets a little complicated and gets a little felonious doing that. They knew it. So, $1 million. By the way, did you know that Bill Clinton had 95 meetings with the Riottis while he was president? That means he met with them more than with Chelsea. Something about those billionaires.
Children played in the playground, swinging on the swing, didn't hear the sound of the single plane that flew overhead. Third shift workers were just going to bed. There was a flash of light and a rumbling noise. Gone in an instant. Parents, girls, and boys. 10,000 mothers were boiling rice. 1,000 prisoners of war were rolling their dice, hoping they'd survive this terrible storm. When each young man in his vanished in the air in the blink of an eye. One moment they lived, in the next they all died. Hiroshima. Farmers were looking at their fields, planning the harvest, guessing at yield, dreaming of life after the war. Next second they weren't. living no more. Hiroshima. Hiroshima. Ten thousand lovers made love to each other. Each one of them thinking there might not be another. Living so long with death everywhere, much more than one person alone can bear. But there wasn't time for a final kiss. Who could have known it would end like this? Living their lives, grandparents, children, fathers and wives. Now they're just shadows on the street. In such a quick burst of incredible heat. Now listen to them talk about doing it again. From whence came the souls of these terrible men? Hiroshima. Hiroshima. Hiroshima.
Now for something completely different.
Phone calls and the letters that you send, 'cause there's additional cracks in the Liberty Bell. Ever waters run low in the American well. We gotta burn down the bush. You gotta turn up the heat. You gotta look up, fight to Crawford, and buy it from Rose Seat. Because W's got a mission, and W's got a plan. Yeah, W's got his pistol, and it's burning in his hand. He's turned the world into one big Texas. What? Turn the world into one big Texas. Turn the world into one big Texas. Turn the world into one big Texas.
Thank you for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and we're continuing with billionaires and ballot bandits with the always entertaining investigative journalist Greg Palast on how to steal an election in 9 easy steps.
So Fred Thompson said, wait, you can't have foreign money in a U.S. election campaign. That's another felony. So he wanted to hold hearings and bust them all. You know, he got that badge from his acting class. And then Trent Lott, and I investigated. So I said, what the heck happened? It doesn't take long for me to figure this one out. You can figure it out, right? So I called a senator who knew exactly what happened, who was willing to talk to me. And I spoke to a couple staffers who were willing to talk to me. And they said what was obvious. Trent Lott, Senator Lott, the head of the Republican Senate leader, went to Thompson and said, not your night, not your night, big boy. So they took away all his committee powers. They shut down his investigation of both the Clintons, the Riottis, and the Kochs on the same day. And Thompson resigned from the Senate, but they let him keep his blonde committee counsel, the new Mrs. Thompson. They traded billionaires. They said, we don't do Riotti, they don't do Kochs. That's how it works, see? So everyone has their billionaires. And so if you're true blue, you may be upset reading this book because, yep, there are 37 billionaires at Romney's breakfast. There's a fourth of that at Obama's, but they've got enough, okay? Now, that's part of the game, but why? What's going on here and how? So what are they doing now? That's the history, okay? And the Supreme Court, people didn't notice, were also not only Citizens United saying you could be a corporation as a people that can donate. We can donate. Frankencorps. You can't, by the way, give more than $2,000, but they can. But they also had the speech now and decision, and also Republican National Committee, the Federal Election Commission, which said that not-for-profit charities can give unlimited donations and politic. Okay? Remember, Committee for Our Children's Future? It just came back. It just came back. And now it's legal. And another chapter, and other nights I've been talking about Pat Robertson, but we'll leave that one aside for the moment. You'll just have to get the book, because otherwise we'll be here all night, which will be just too much fun. But So what do they do with this? What now? What does it mean for 2012? See, House Seal election, 9 easy steps. It says Greg Palast investigates the Koch gang, Karl Rove, and their buck buddies. What do we care about Osage Indians and Citizens United and Bill Clinton and all that stuff? Okay, the answer, there's two answers. One is data trust and the other is Themis. Okay, what are these billionaires doing now? How do they take it out? Now, you were told that Greg Palast is the guy who uncovered how Catherine Harris got a database and knocked out tens of thousands of black voters from the voter rolls because they were ex-felons, ex-cons, who are not allowed to vote in Florida. And I got the disks, and I cracked them, and I found Willie Steen, a Gulf War veteran, never had a parking ticket, goes to vote with his 5-year-old son to give him a lesson in democracy. Boy, did he get it. They said, your dad's a criminal, felon, can't vote. It's true. Now, the interesting thing about Willie, even before I met him, I knew he was African-American. Why? Because right next to his name in those Florida voter rolls, it says B-L-A, next to every black person in Florida, B-L-A on the official voter rolls. Now, they're not guessing. They know what to do. Now, wait, how did it happen? And this is the important thing. People forget how it happens. There was a database that was handed to the state, which had the name of all these other felons around the country. Willie Osteen, like an Irish O apostrophe. Willie Osteen commits a crime in another state. Willie Steen, Gulf War veteran, BLA, loses his vote, et cetera, et cetera. Now, who did that, by the way? Where did they get these lists? Well, remember I said that Mitt was brunching with billionaires? And I mentioned the name Ken Langone. Who came up with that list? Who came up with the blacklist? Who came up with the drone hit of tens of thousands of black people? It was Ken Langone, created a database company. Now, why? Another billionaire. He didn't need to make a few bucks from some database company, but he did need to get a president. This is how he does it, Ken Langone, right? Now, what did he need it for? Oh, well, a guy named Elliot Spitzer is charging him with insider trading. See, the first thing these guys want is a get-out-jail-free card. But that apparently the change in the regime in Washington did not impress prosecutor Elliot Spitzer. So he was followed by Mr. Langone's people. Believe me, I keep it zipped. Well, not always if you read Vulture's Picnic. But I'm not running for anything. I'm running away. And there's good reasons. There are really good reasons why I had my pants off in the room with Miss Jamaica in London. It was the mirror photographer that seemed to create the problem. But that's how it works. Now, that list. That was ancient history. In fact, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits is a sequel to The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, which is insane. Why am I writing a sequel to a book about the theft of elections in America? Doesn't anyone get it? I thought people would read it. I'd never have to write a sequel. They say, oh, yeah, that's terrible. Well, instead, Rove, Karl Rove. Now, if you don't know, he is George Bush, the president, had a nickname for everyone and named Carl after a flower in Texas, a turd blossom. And Mr. Blossom. Mr. Blossom is back at it, see? Because right now, in Florida, you'll see in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits the latest list of ex-cons. And you know what? It's amazing what you can see when you're looking. Okay, Thomas John Brown commits a crime. And believe it or not, there is a Thomas Brown in Florida on the voter rolls. See, one nice thing about going after black folk, they make it really easy. They all have the same names, right? They use that. They dig statistics. Thomas John Brown commits a crime. Thomas Brown, BLA, loses his vote in Florida. Okay, now. And one of my favorites in here, Robert Moore commits a crime. And Bobby Moore, see, they have this fancy algorithms that they use. So that Robert, when he re-registers as Bobby, they get him, right? So Robert Moore commits a crime and Bobby Moore loses her vote. B-O-B-B-I, Mrs. Bobby Moore. But they got it right because it was both for B-L-A. Okay, now, thousands and thousands and thousands of names. By the way, the New York Times ignored it the first time I wrote the story. The second time in 2004, they actually said, oh, yeah, they're flawed lists. And we're seeing this now again. Oh, with the flawed lists of illegal alien voters, of fraudulent voters, the flawed lists. See, so when the U.S. media, which I have a section called I'm Depressed, and it's about what I call American journalistic lazy assism, okay? The way that they report is they say, oh, the Democrats say the earth is round, and the Republicans say the earth is flat, and that there are dragons at the end, and, you know, we're balanced. That's the best In fact, in there, I quote National Petroleum Radio saying, I didn't get that right. The reporter actually said about the alien voters that there is good, that the Republicans have good evidence that there are alien voters on the voter rolls, you know, like from Mars and stuff. Alien voters on the voter rolls. Good evidence, says NPR. And I'm picking on them because they're the best. Not like the foxhole, the peacock, the eyeball, which was used to be just a pimple on, it's not an eyeball, it's a pimple on Viacom's rectum. But, now, they're the best. Strong, I try to contact NPR. What was the strong evidence? Now, if in BBC, if we say that there's strong evidence that there are illegal voters, that's saying someone's committed a crime, so we would have to find the criminal. So I said, so where is, do you have a name or something? Do you have a name? Oh, no, they had evidence. Did you check, did you find the voter? I mean, see, one thing about voter fraud, it's really easy to catch. It's insanely easy to catch. People hand you their name, their address, their social security number, last four digits. You can't miss them unless you don't want to find them. In case you'd rather, like with Bin Laden, just look but never find, because that's much more valuable. See, because if you looked and found, let me explain. There was no flawed felon list in 2000. There's no flawed felon list now. I've gone through the list. There's not one, zero, none illegal voter. Not one. Not one. And I can tell you this because I went to the Attorney General of Florida and said, now, if you found an illegal voter, would you arrest them? It's a felony crime. Absolutely. I said, here's a list of 94,000 from Catherine Harris. Where do we begin? I'll go with you. Film it. Bust them. And he said, you're kidding. It's just a list. It's just the presidency of the United States. It's just a list. 181,000 illegal alien voters in Florida. I told the governor of Florida, Scott, I said, listen, if you find one in a thousand illegal alien voters, it's really unusual. Someone is an illegal alien and they submit their name and address to the state. Wow.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
They want more names from the federal government. That's what the fight is about, right? And NPR, you know, on one side says this, I said, why do they want names? They should want federal troops. We got the biggest crime wave in American history, 181,000 people committing a massive act, felonious crime. Why aren't we rounding them up? Because I said, well, you get fined one in a thousand, just 181. Bring them to me. Give me their names. And I will eat your underpants in the Capitol Rotunda, and I'm still hungry. One in a thousand. Yeah. And, oh, and, yeah, NPR. The evidence is that one time they actually deported someone named Juan Gonzalez. And there's someone on the voter rolls in Florida named Juan Gonzalez. Welcome to America. Now, what do they do with the databases? That's the simple stuff. I just gave you one. Purging. There's nine ways. I'm not going to keep you here tonight. The nine ways. It's one dirty trick of getting you to get billionaires and ballot bandits. Second one, caging. Okay, now, told you about Karl Rove. He has $250 million. $250 million. He doesn't have it. Crossroads is not his a super PAC, as it's called. One end is a super PAC. Mostly, it is a social welfare organization. It's a charity. Remember? I said, besides Citizens United, underneath, quietly, was Speech Now, which was those charities, Committee for Our Children's Future, Christian Coalition, all these social welfare organizations whose welfare seems to involve finding BLA voters all over the country and going, pshew. Did you know? One of the nice statistics I found in those files that they won't let us look at anymore is that in the last 2 years, 22 million voters have been purged from the voter rolls of America. 22 million. One in five voters in the swing state of Colorado by the Republican Secretary of State, done so quietly that when I told the Democratic governor that he just lost a fifth of his voters, he didn't know about it. They're good. They're really good. Okay, they're really good. And no one will stand up for these voters because they're fraudulent voters. See, the fraudulent voter, that's like the new terrorist sleeper cell, the red menace, the yellow peril. They're coming to get us. They're swimming across the Gulf of Mexico to vote, steal our elections, the fraudulent voter. They just can't find any. In fact, according to Tova Wang, Dr. Tova Wang, who did a study for these guys, she comes from a heritage from the Koch Foundation, and she But she's a really honest professor, statistician. She was brought in as an expert to count the fraudulent voters, and she wrote a report called Voter Intimidation, Voter Suppression in America, because what she found is that the crime in voting is not what the voters do, it's what's done to them. And she wrote that report for the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, and they changed the title of the report to Fraudulent Voting in America. And she said that it's more likely that you will get hit by lightning than commit an act of voting fraud. You know, they want the ID. That's all about, like, you will actually use someone else's name and go in and vote for them. You know, oh, I'm George Bush. Give me that. People don't do that. In fact, actually, I looked it up. It's 60 times more likely you'll get hit by lightning than commit an act of fraudulent voting. Only 6 a year. And yet, remember that number? 6 million votes and voters get lost to stop the 6 fraudulent voters. 1 million votes, citizens lose their rights for one fraudulent voter. And it's not just any citizens. It's not the ones at the billionaire's brunch. Okay? It's not at, they're not at the billionaire's brunch. That's the point. And it's not partisan, because it's all about class war is the story. It's about those who have and those who don't. And when they, the point is that those who have ain't going to give you the right to have yours, because they want all of it. Now, how? Karl Rove, Data Trust, $250 million, social welfare organization. What do? They have this big data mining operation. They were sending out letters to voters. High voter, first class, do not forward. And when the letter came back, they would go into a cage, physical cage actually, and they called those caged voters. Then they made up lists, thousands and thousands and thousands of names of caged voters, because these were fraudulent voters, obviously voting, because remember they said do not forward. So if they're not at that address, they're obviously fraudulent voters, right? Well, who are they? Well, they sent letters to old Jewish ladies in Miami in August who are snowbirds, sent to go north. Okay, so do not forward, they could have their votes challenged. See, they went after the elderly of Zion. And it's not that they don't like Jewish voters, they just don't like bluish voters. But that was a very small group. The big groups there, page after page, I found of homeless shelters, page after page of students living in dormitories at traditionally black colleges, letters sent to them in August when they're not there now. And my favorite, or my, the most unusual, you got to look at page 116 of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and you'll see Naval Air Station Jacksonville, Naval Air Station, Naval Air Station, Naval Air Station, military bases. They were sending letters to soldiers registered at their military base and do not forward. So if the soldier wasn't at their base, they would challenge them as a fraudulent voter. This is under contract with the Republican National Committee. Long may it wave. Right? Now, this is what they did. By the way, in case you are wondering, yes, it is legal for a soldier to send in an absentee ballot from a war zone. You can vote from under a Humvee. It's perfectly legal, Mr. Rowe. But, and here's the wonderful nature of this crime. I talked to one of the soldiers on the list. And he said, I got the vote. I said, "You mean, what do you mean? He said, I mailed in my ballot. I said, was it counted? Well, I don't know. Exactly, because they challenge it. You don't even know it's challenged, and it's in the garbage. 488,000 absentee ballots mailed in, not counted, okay? I don't know what the new system is in Washington. Oregon's the only system that I know of so far that has an app. They will contact you if there's a challenge to your ballot. I don't know about Washington. Maybe they do. But I'll tell you this. They sure as hell don't in those swing states. Okay. There will be 26 million ballots mailed in, and 2 million, there, every expert says minimum 2 million will be challenged and lost and put in the dumpster. Soldiers, but not just any soldiers, BLA soldiers. Okay, now, Bobby Kennedy, who wrote the beginning and later chapter in the book, I'm not a lawyer. He is, dean of the law school. And he said what they did because they targeted people by race and religion. He said, that's a crime. Karl Rove should be in jail. That's just his opinion. He's dean of the law school, and his daddy wrote the law, Voting Rights Act. And he said his assistant, Tim Griffin, should be in jail, but he's not in jail. He's in Congress. I want you to know that when I expose this matter, I'll tell you what happened when I expose this matter, but he has a, you know what? He has an assistant, too, that was involved, a guy named Matt Rhodes. He's not in jail either. Where's Matt Rhodes today? Oh, he's campaign manager for Mitt Romney. All right. Now, is it about partisanship? No. Who busted these guys? I you know, by the way, I got these because, well, Carl sent me and Tim sent me their emails, the caging list. They don't always do that. But, you know, Tim Griffin, congressman, is not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and he was he sent out to, you know, the Republican National Committee chairman, statechairman.org, you know, but the RNC.org, as opposed to RNC.com. RNC.org is owned by my friend John Wooden, who sent me the emails as soon as he got them. I'm not allowed to look at them under BBC rules if it's not an email address to me, unless there's evidence of criminality. And plenty of evidence of criminality. So that's what those... See, I don't care, frankly. If they want to spend $250 million on ads telling us we need a commander-in-chief whose horse gets stuck in the car elevator, I don't care. God bless America. This is free speech. Do say what you want. Sell me whatever soap you want, okay? Don't make fun, by the way, of Romney's car elevators. Those cars are so old, they can't take the stairs.
Couldn't resist.
Yeah.
Offshore drilling is completely safe. You're getting sleepy. Cuts for the rich create new jobs. You're getting sleepy. Financial corporations will police themselves, and illegal aliens are stealing all your pens. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll awake refreshed and vote Republican. White people are the real victims of racism. You're getting sleepy. Fox News is fair and balanced. Sleepy. Healthcare is a privilege and not a right. We can work together to wipe out the middle class. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll awake confused and vote Republican. I'm not saying Barack Obama is a foreign-born Islamist puppy eater. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you decide. There's no evidence to suggest that Nancy Pelosi is a thousand-year-old Nazi vampire. But that's what I heard. Somebody said that. It was me. Democrats want to put you in a re-education camp and kill your grandma and bring Stalin back to life. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, Republican. And we'll prove it. John Boehner uses no tanning products. Sleepy. Newt Gingrich doesn't make shit up. Sleepy. Ben Quayle is gonna knock the hell out of Washington. Ronald Reagan. Republican. When I snap my fingers and invade Ontario, you'll vote Republican. And when I drag the nation through 8 years of carnage and incompetence and leave the place a bigger mess than Lindsay Lohan's trailer, and blame the Democrats for cleaning up too slow, you will awake refreshed, confused, and somewhat paranoid, and you'll remember nothing.
More from Great Speeches and Interviews after these messages.
appetite for destruction can't be easy to defend. When all your heroes have abandoned you, or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever learn? How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless killing spree? How many kids can you kill and send the lower class to build so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? Whatever happened to your resolve? How did you join their ranks? Afraid of some Arab who can't even find reverse on a Russian tank. When the whole wide world is watching and they think that you're absurd. From Canada to East Asia, they're giving you the bird. How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless murder spree? How many people can you kill and send the working class to fill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? Not just CNN. There are other news outlets not owned by our government. You can call me left-wing liberal, or you can call me communist. But are you totalitarian or just an anarchist? Go and follow your false prophet, that lying, greedy man. Doesn't have the intellect to run a hot dog stand. How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless murder spree? How many kids can you kill and send the working class to fill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? In your SUV, in your SUV, in your SUV.
Thank you for listening to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and we're continuing with billionaires and ballot bandits with the always entertaining investigative journalist Greg Palast on how to steal an election in 9 easy steps.
But it is about Willie Steen, right?
I'm not going to hang you up much longer.
It's about Willie Steen. It's about the people who can't be here on those voter rolls and aren't here tonight, right? People who suddenly disappear. And it isn't just Republicans doing it. And this is the great evil, okay? One of the guys that, by the way, blew the whistle. When I blew the whistle, I went to a federal prosecutor who was ready to bust the story as well. David Iglesias, the Republican prosecutor for New Mexico. Captain David Iglesias, who's also a military JAG. So he's a federal prosecutor, and he said he was given these caging lists, the caged voters, and he was told, go find the caged voters and arrest them, the fraudulent voters. So he said, okay, I'm going to get them. Put on his badge, ran across. He said he went all over the mesas of New Mexico, and he couldn't find one. He just found, you know, old ladies with common Hispanic names. They were citizens. In fact, the Mexicanos of New Mexico were citizens of America before it was America. Really? And so he said that they're Americans, you know, these are fraudulent voters. Yeah, they had funny addresses like this,
at the Native reservations and the Pueblos, because they had addresses like second house from the post office at the Pueblo. It's not fraudulent. It's poverty. Okay. So he said, I can't find any. You know what they told him? You know what the Rove gang told him? They said, well, arrest someone. He said, what? They said, arrest. We'll just arrest him. He said, it's not the Soviet Union. We don't arrest people. They said, well, you can let him go after the election. He wouldn't. No, that wasn't his America. And so they did fire him. And, you know, it's one of the, again, the way the stories come out. The press play the firing of prosecutors as political. They were removed for political reasons. They weren't removed for political reasons. Everyone was a Republican. Everyone endorsed George Bush for president. It wasn't political. It was criminal. These were all 8 prosecutors who said, we are sworn to uphold the law, not to hunt down innocent citizens. But only Iglesias would come forward and say what was really going on, that they wouldn't take part in the crime, that they were lawmen, not lawbreakers. Iglesias stood up, gave me the info. Now, and when they fired him, that was a tougher one. So they needed cause. So it was absenteeism. He didn't show up for his job as federal prosecutor. Well, and that, and it was true. He was missing for weeks because they should have known he would stand up, because if you look in the book, you'll see a picture of Tom Cruise, the guy who plays Iglesias in A Few Good Men. That's the guy who says he wants the truth. So they said he was absent. Yeah, he was absent because the military told him to be the chief prosecutor at the Bosnian war crimes trial. So he was, when he was in Bosnia, they said he was absent and they fired him. God bless America. Now, that's how it works. And you know what he did? They didn't like something else. You know that he busted Democrats? He arrested Democrats for vote fraud and vote theft? And Karl Rove was steaming mad. Why? Wasn't that the game? No. Because what happens was that there were Acoma Pueblo natives, the Native Americans there. I was down there talking to the chief. They opposed a uranium mine that was going into their sacred mountain, ripping into their sacred mountain. And a less sacred issue was that it was poisoning their fields. But the local Democratic Party is getting a little cash from the mining companies. They decide they weren't going to let no Indians get in the way. So they knocked off their names as fraudulent voters. Same trick. Fraudulent voters. And they said, and when the Pueblo natives came to vote, as they have forever, same, they go vote at the church. And they said, you can't vote, but we'll give you a provisional ballot. This is another trick. There's 9 ways to steal an election. One way is the provisional placebo ballot. Oh, see, because after the felon wipe out, the Congressional Black Caucus won the right for you, in case your name is purged wrongly, that you get a provisional ballot. But they got the right to the ballot, but never the right to have it counted. So the ballots were sent in to the county officials, but it was missing the proper envelopes, so they threw out all the ballots. Of course, the county officials gave them the wrong envelopes. Iglesias arrested those officials who were Democrats. But again, see, the GOP said, no. See, because that's about officials suppressing votes, stealing votes from voters. That's not the game. They don't want that game opened up. Yeah, the Democrats stole those 200 votes, while the Republicans had stolen 20,000. That same election, same way. They didn't want the captain opening that can of worms. But both, that's one of the problems. People say, why don't the Democrats stand up? Well, first of all, the biological issue. Jellyfish have donut spines. But, I mean, you saw Al Gore did speak here, right? And the other is that they do it too. Not as well, not as big, not as well funded. Republicans have super duper cyber databases, and the Democrats still have their floppy disks, but it's dirty all the way around. So that's one of the reasons. They're all in it differently. The big wipeout. You know, how could George Bush have won New Mexico, which is all Democratic, all minority voters overwhelmingly, because the Hispanic Democratic vote was wiped out. There was one precinct for soldiers again. All soldier votes. Not one vote for President of the United States. Not one. I called up the Secretary of State and said, not one vote? Not one vote? They actually mailed in ballots from overseas, hundreds and hundreds of ballots, but not one voted? They just mailed in blank ballots? And she said, those people just can't make up their minds. It was very poor. It was all Hispanic and Native American soldiers. Those people. Becky Vigil Heron, a Hispanic Democrat. I'm glad to say that through some of my efforts, she's on her way to prison. But they do. Democrats hold firing squads in a circle. And they see, because everyone goes after the same voter, the poor voter, because it's about control of the Democratic Party there. It's about control, just the same as in Chicago, when Obama knocked off and challenged the signatures of legal voters in his district so he could run unopposed, knocked off his opponent. He learned early. I was there. I lived in his district.
Okay, now,
that's how it works. Everyone gets a little dirty. So then the real dirt, no one can blow the whistle. Now, so, nine ways to steal an election. Nine ways. Take away Willie Steen's vote, caging, bouncing ballots, provisional ballots, absentee ballots in the garbage. You know, it goes on and on. Sounds pretty grim. And billionaires run it all, the Koch brothers, right? And so what can we do? Duh. It's just, you know, we can't. They're all the same. And what's the point? They can steal my vote. It's kind of like a new kind of Valley Girl politics raging across America. Knock it off. Okay. All right. Now, because we have a solution. They have nine ways to steal the election, but we have seven ways to beat the ballot bandits, which is at the back of billionaires and ballot bandits. A little line, you just cut it out, you send it around, you copy it any way you can. You go to ballotbandits.org and you can download a copy of the big poster. You can get the details of the poster, ballotbandits.org from our foundation. No charge. I want this around. Seven ways to beat the ballot bandits, things you should do. One, you can't even do the first one. It says, don't go postal, don't mail in your vote, for God's sake. Well, that's gone here. But one of the things is, of course, like register to vote. Say, well, I registered to vote. You're not taking notes? 22 million people knocked off the voter rolls. My assistant, should I dock his pay? He shows up to vote. They said, you're an inactive voter. He says, I voted for everything, but you don't include the PDA president. They said, sorry, he didn't check. He made the poster, but he didn't check. He lost his vote. Okay? Don't assume you're registered. You better go online and better check that out. That's your job. Oh, my God. We have to do all these things now to protect their vote. Seven ways to beat the ballot ban. Think of it as your ballot condom for safe voting. You have to have it. Now, it's in the book. We have some posters here you can donate to the foundation so we can make more posters. That's what we're going to do. The more you throw in the bucket, the more posters we'll make. It's not for one candidate or another. Really. That's for other speakers and not for me. You know, I grew up on the wrong side of the railroad tracks in Los Angeles, Chicano neighborhood. And, you know, we were just supposed to go off to Vietnam, and if we didn't get our legs blown off next to those corporate guys in the foxholes with us, those Exxon holding the gun, if we didn't get our legs blown off or our head blown off, we came back to work at the Chevy plant, which then was shipped overseas. I'm going to tell you, did that too in the book. But they took away my friends' lives. And then they took away their jobs, and they even took away the railroad tracks. But damn it, I'm not going to let them take away the vote. That's not what's going to happen. So now, this is what we're going to do. It's about what we can do. And if you think we can't do it, come on. Yeah, of course. Every generation has had to fight for the vote. The suffragette movement, the abolitionist movement, the big anti-globalization movement called the United States of America when we fought against the World Trade Organization called the British Empire and won the vote. Took it away from the royals. Civil War. Martin Luther King took a bullet. I'm asking you to take a book. Jeez. A comic book. His son, Martin Luther King III, loves it too, by the way. Seriously. As you know, and in the back there are these wonderful media resources to get the real information, unpolluted. Action groups, Rock the Vote, Operation Rainbow, Push, LULAC, the big Latin Americans, Latinos United. Excuse me, I'm getting this wrong. Forgive me, lo siento. League of United Latin American Citizens, biggest Latino organization in America, of course. 11 million Hispanics, citizens. Who are not registered, not for lack of trying. California, you know that they knocked off 42% of the new voter registrations were disallowed in California by the Republican Secretary of State. So you think it's just sort of heat of the night, you know, old Dixie. Well, it's surfing USA too. As Jesse Jackson said, who's working with me on this, he said, you know, we've marched too long, we've worked too hard, we've died too young to let them take this vote away. So we will get the books because they are our weapon of mass instruction. They are what it is, our way of getting out. We don't copyright all this material. Spread it around. Put it in your newsletters, your website. This is not a for-profit publication. We're not trying to hold this hostage, the information. We want it out. I'll be giving films to Amy, putting it on the air. We're going to get these out. We're going to get out the seven ways to beat the ballot bandits. That's your job. It's not passive. I don't want you to just get a book and hold it. This is something for you to put, well, in Florida, you can't bring it into the polling booth, but you can bring a gun. So put it fits small to fit in your holster. So this is your freedom holster with your ballot condom. We've got work to do. We've got work to do. You know, like I said, I grew up with Chicano neighborhood, and they just want to take it all. You know, all of it. Charles Koch, you know, he says he wants his fair share, and he wants all of it, all of this, and those ballots. And so he's created the Themis machine that makes Karl Rove's machine look like a Thomas Jefferson memorial. They're not done. But he may be too big to jail now. Too big to fail, but he ain't too big to jail. I want him to get all of it, including his Miranda rights. So let's get to work. Thank you so much.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Oh, Tell me what I wait to do. Just try to stop me.
And now for something completely different.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, February 22, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, as attacks continue in Syria, aid groups say hospitals are being destroyed and residents are struggling to get basic medical care.
There are so many needs. There are so many people who are facing this all over the country. Men, women, and children.
Lawyers and immigrant rights advocates call on the federal government to shut down the controversial Operation Streamline program. And in Colorado, lawmakers move forward a package of gun control bills that would strengthen background checks and limit magazines to 15 rounds. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Hundreds of Palestinian, Israeli, and international activists demonstrated in the West Bank city of Hebron today in a push to reopen a major market area. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society tells FSRN that more than 20 people were injured by tear gas canisters and rubber bullets after clashes erupted between Israeli security forces and protesters. FSRN's Lena Odgaard was there and files this report.
In a campaign to reopen Hebron's former main market street, activists marched through the old city. Issa Amro is coordinator of the Palestinian group Youth Against Settlements.
We are here to ask to reopen Shuhada Street, which was closed before 19 years, and to remember the Ibrahimi Mosque massacres, where 29 Palestinians were killed by an Israeli retired soldier. And because of that massacre, they closed Shuhada Street, they closed all the markets in Hebron, and they closed many Palestinian apartments, so they destroyed the economy.
In a chaotic scene, protesters were met with tear gas and sound bombs from Israeli military, while young Palestinian men hurled rocks. One journalist was injured and taken away in an ambulance by Palestinian medics. Clashes also erupted in Jerusalem, Jenin, Nablus, Jayus, and in front of the Ofer prison outside Ramallah. Palestinians there have been rallying for about a week in support of hunger-striking prisoners. Lena Odgor, FSRN, Hebron.
One of those hunger-striking prisoners is Samer Essawi. This week, an Israeli court sentenced the Palestinian political detainee to 8 months in prison, meaning he could be freed as early as March. Late yesterday, Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi decreed national parliamentary elections would begin at the end of April in an effort to quell mass protests and political and economic turmoil in the country. But the announcement was not met with support from non-Islamist factions. Opposition leader Mohamed El Baradei protested on social media today that the decision amidst severe societal polarization and eroding state authority is a recipe for disaster. His group is threatening to boycott elections, according to the AP. A territorial conflict between the West African countries of Guinea and Ivory Coast has escalated in the past month. Troops from Guinea entered a town that had been under Ivorian control for decades. Last night, Guinea's foreign minister publicly claimed the city was theirs. FSRN's Karim Kamara reports from the capital, Conakry.
On Thursday, Guinea's foreign minister, Francois Fall, for the first time confirmed the presence of Guinean troops in the border town of Pieba. He said the strategic trade point belongs to Guinea and accused Ivorian security forces of illegal occupation. Fall added that the Ivorian flag has been brought down and the flag of Guinea is now flying over the town. According to a report, local authorities in Pieba have fled to a nearby town. Many residents have also left for fear of being caught in a confrontation between the two countries. Sources close to the Guinean Foreign Ministry told FSRN that the foreign minister will travel to Ivory Coast Sunday for talks. The Ivorian government has urged the Guinean troops to withdraw immediately from the town to avoid confrontation. Karim Kamara, FSRN, Conakry.
The U.S. government's civil case against BP and the Deepwater Horizon oil spill disaster is scheduled to go to trial Monday in New Orleans. But there's also the possibility that the oil company will settle with the government. John Kostiak with the National Wildlife Federation says it's imperative that any penalty against BP must be high enough to make sure another spill doesn't happen.
Department of Justice has a responsibility to set a penalty amount that factors in BP's assets, we know are nearly $300 billion, and the risk that they will continue business as usual if their bottom line is not affected by any settlement.
The Deepwater Horizon disaster in 2010 leaked an estimated 170 million gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico, making it the largest environmental disaster in U.S. history. Nearly 3 years after the spill, the full impact still isn't known, according to Brian Moore with the National Audubon Society.
The people of the Gulf do not feel like justice has yet been served. The damage caused to the environment is significant, and much needs to be done.
The first phase of the trial will focus on the causes of the disaster and who should be held responsible. In November, BP reached a $4.5 billion criminal settlement with the Justice Department. Just last week, Transocean, the contractor that owned the Deepwater Horizon oil rig, settled criminal charges for violating the Clean Water Act. Attorney General Eric Holder says the $400 million settlement will go towards protecting, restoring, and rebuilding the Gulf Coast region. And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. Rocket strikes in Syria's northern city Aleppo killed at least 14, including children, and wounded dozens more today. That's according to the UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights and video posted online by anti-government activists. The violence comes just a day after several car bombs shattered buildings in Damascus. One bomb exploded near the Masra district by Russia's embassy and the offices of President Bashar al-Assad's ruling Ba'ath Party. The local coordination committees put the death toll Thursday in Damascus at more than 100. Also today, the Syrian National Coalition, the main opposition group, said it plans to name members of a transitional government in the coming days, according to Al Jazeera. Fighting and control of territory is disrupting aid organizations as they try to reach the 4 million people the UN says are in need of humanitarian assistance and medicine. For more, we're joined by Kasia Queen, who leads the Doctors Without Borders mission for Syria. She's just returned from northern Syria and joins us via Skype from near the border in Turkey. Welcome to FSRN.
Thank you so much. Thanks for this opportunity to discuss what's happening in Syria.
You've just been at your field hospital in the north of the country. How are the medical needs of the people that you're seeing there changing?
When we first started our operations, we had a lot of trauma and people coming in, victims of the direct conflict and of the violence. And as we continued more and more, and as the time passed, we saw that there was the need for just also primary health care, which would be chronic diseases like diabetes, heart disease, also just the need for maternal health care, so for women to be able to go someplace where they could give birth or have a C-section in an emergency. But the longer and longer the war goes on, then what we see is that the need, the normal health system has also started to, or is, it, gone and in decline. So just the normal health care that the people need who are living there is also now become an urgent need.
Well, according to the World Health Organization, more than half of all hospitals in the country have been damaged. What about the access? People finding these field hospitals or other hospitals in order to get health care?
Definitely. This has become, for most people, impossible. Also because a lot of the facilities now, because the infrastructure is being ruined, don't have the water, don't have the electricity, that they can't function. And we do know that, you know, health facilities all over the country have also been targeted. So it makes it really difficult for them to continue to operate.
You mentioned infrastructure and water. This week, the World Health Organization also warned of a typhoid outbreak in the Deir al-Zor province. We at FSRN spoke to a resident from Homs early this week who described trouble accessing clean water and sanitation and electricity. How much is access to water or basic things like that contributing to health problems?
Definitely. I mean, our teams did receive requests from Syrian doctors in Deir ez-Zor about the cases of typhoid, and we have supplied 4,000 treatments to them. They also have requested or found 450 cases of cutaneous leishmaniasis, and we're also giving them support for that disease. Definitely, without clean water, you open the door for many diseases, and it is a huge concern. Also, without electricity, as I mentioned before, hospitals cannot operate. You can't do cold chain. You can't keep the medicines in the proper temperature. You don't have light. The medical machines that you need to use don't run. So it's definitely the impact that the war is having on the infrastructure, whether that be the electricity or the water, has definitely a huge impact on how you can provide health facilities and how they're running.
Kasia Queen with Doctors Without Borders, can you tell us about a family or individual you met while at the field hospital in northern Syria?
I think one of the patients that impacted me the most and was a small boy of 10 years old who was nearby a mosque in a town, and there was one of the drums that is filled with kind of oil and fuel, and it had been dropped on the town near the mosque, and this boy had shrapnel put through his stomach, and fortunately, he was able to make it to our hospital, and it's a happy ending, and he's fine, and he'll fully recover. But just the fear in his eyes at 10 years old to see that it makes a huge impact.
So he was outside. Was he playing or something outside when this explosion took place in the area?
Exactly. Yes. The boy was outside when a drum was dropped from the air and in the middle of a town. And just also makes you realize there are so many needs. There are so many people who are facing this all over the country, men, women, and children. And we need to do more as a humanitarian organizations.
Kasia Queen is head of the Mission for Syria with Doctors Without Borders. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
In the U.S., deep automatic cuts from the budget sequester are set to go into effect in just 1 week, and lawmakers and activists are making last-minute appeals for saving some federal programs and eliminating others. Human rights and legal experts gathered on Capitol Hill today to make the case for cutting an immigration prosecution program they say wastes taxpayer money and violates the due process rights of undocumented people. Yet some lawmakers want to expand the program as part of comprehensive immigration reform. FSRN's Alice Olstein has the details.
Each year, tens of thousands of people appear in federal courtrooms along the U.S.-Mexico border under a program called Operation Streamline that prosecutes and incarcerates migrants. After spending a night in a crowded cell with no shower facilities, the detainees are often brought before a judge dirty and disoriented, having just been caught the day before in the desert. They're shackled at the ankles and have their hands cuffed to their own waists and have difficulty walking because their belts and shoelaces have been confiscated. They're entitled by law to a lawyer and a translator, but Heather Williams, a public defender in Tucson, Arizona, says the overburdened system isn't meeting their right to due process. She and other lawyers have only about half an hour with each client and can have up to 6 clients a day, 5 days a week.
They have to make a determination in a very short period of time about whether the person's even competent to go ahead and plead. Sometimes that competency can be because the person doesn't speak enough English or Spanish to even participate in the process. They speak an indigenous dialect for which there is no readily available court interpreter. They have to make an assessment about whether or not the person might actually be a U.S. citizen, might actually have permission to be in the U.S. People can derive U.S. citizenship from a parent or even from a grandparent, and we have to explore that. We have to make a determination sometimes about whether or not if they have a prior deportation, that prior deportation was lawful or not. We have to do all that in a very short period of time in another language.
Operation Streamline started in Arizona in 2006 as part of the National Department of Homeland Security strategy of prevention through deterrence. In essence, make life in the U.S. so unpleasant for migrants that they give up and return home. But in a Capitol Hill briefing Friday, California Federal Magistrate James Stiven argued that the program hasn't discouraged immigration, even with its long jail sentences.
People are going to continue to come into the United States because they are needing to link up with family members, they're needing to find employment, they're needing to avoid problems that they're having within their home country. If you look at what's happened in Arizona, Operation Streamline has not seemed to have any kind of deterrent effect because their numbers of people being arrested at the border and being prosecuted in the system have gone up substantially in relationship or in comparison to what our experience has been in San Diego, where we do not have Operation Streamline.
Stiven says his county decided not to implement the program out of concerns it would divert too many resources away from combating violent crime.
The cost impact would have been significant because not only does it make judges' job much, much harder, there are defense counsel that have to be afforded for all the persons being charged with felony crimes. The prosecutor's office is going to have to work harder. Interpreters have to be hired. And just the facility of the courts itself in terms of what we're physically able to handle would have been significantly impacted if Operation Streamline had been put into effect.
Judge Stiven estimated that had his county been forced to adopt the program, his caseload would have been about 80% immigration cases, with only 20% dedicated to everything else. Yet in recent Capitol Hill hearings, lawmakers have voiced support for increasing immigration enforcement programs, including Operation Streamline. The so-called Gang of Eight senators currently crafting an immigration reform bill includes Republicans John McCain and Marco Rubio, who pushed for a bill in 2011 that would have made Operation Streamline mandatory in every county within 150 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. The corporations that profit the most from the program, including the Corrections Corporation of America and GEO Group, have donated tens of thousands of dollars to McCain, Rubio, and other key senators currently debating the future of the U.S. immigration system. Alice Holstein, FSRN, Washington.
Hundreds of thousands of Central American migrants pass through Mexico on their way to the U.S. each year. Thousands never reach their destination, and their families are left searching for answers to the whereabouts of their loved ones. But in a rare case, a missing Honduran migrant was recently found in Veracruz and reconnected to his family. The issue highlights the dangers faced by migrants as they seek better paying work in the north and the challenges faced by families and human rights advocates who try to find those who have gone missing. FSRN's Andalusia Knoll reports.
10 years ago, Brigido Mateo Lopez left his home in the mountains of Honduras to work up north. At the time, Lopez was 17 years old. He ended up in Veracruz, Mexico, where he started working construction. But after 3 years, he lost all contact with his family. An estimated 10,000 migrants are kidnapped or disappeared in Mexico each year, according to Mexico's National Commission on Human Rights. And Lopez's mother was convinced this is what happened to her son. She contacted the Mesoamerican Migrant Movement when they were in Honduras, meeting with families of disappeared migrants. The movement's Ruben Figueroa says they scour Mexico, following small tips in search of disappeared migrants.
We arrived yesterday in Veracruz. We had to continue to search for a migrant who we heard was disappeared since October last year.
After reading a newspaper article describing a wrongful incarceration, and after speaking to Lopez's former roommates, Figueroa and local journalists were able to locate him. Next, they called his mother to deliver the good news.
Hello, dígame.
Doña Tesla, soy Rubén, ¿se acuerda de mí? Mire, ayer encontré a Brígido.
Figueroa tells Lopez's mother that they found her son and he is well and working in Veracruz. They will most likely be reunited when she participates in a caravan of Central American mothers touring Mexico in search of their children. Lopez's case is rare. Unlike others who are disappeared or kidnapped, he had merely lost contact with his family, who live in a rural zone without electricity or postal service. Figueroa says the ease in which they found Lopez demonstrates that the government is not doing their job because they have many more resources which could help many more families connect to their loved ones.
Police authorities are complicit with organized crime groups who commit crimes against migrants. When we organize caravans or denounce the disappearances, we see a very strong indifference, including this case of a mother looking for her son. Sometimes they receive some of the complaints, but they don't do anything with them. There is not a commitment on behalf of the government to do searches. There has always been indifference and inefficiency.
Veracruz is not only a dangerous state for migrants, but also journalists, where during President Felipe Calderón's six-year term, 9 journalists were assassinated. With this violent climate, many have abandoned investigative journalism work and few do serious reporting on organized crime. Angel Ramos is a newspaper journalist in the port of Veracruz and worked with Figueroa to locate Lopez.
I think this is one of the most important issues in Mexico, but reporters are not interested in it. Because it's first of all, it's very dangerous to report these stories. But the principal reason, I think, is we are not prepared. We live in a society that involves us to ignore these issues. And we report politics, we report sports, we report anything that that is not that important, like these issues. And it's sad because the common citizen is not learning what is happening.
Many migrant activists are also looking north to the debate on, quote, comprehensive immigration reform in the United States. A coalition of organizations along the U.S. border is demanding an end to the Homeland Security Program, Operation Streamline, which critics say criminally charges dozens of migrants a day and sends them to detention and deportation proceedings. Elvira Arellano was deported from the U.S. in 2007 and made national headlines by taking sanctuary in a Chicago church, refusing to be separated from her young son. She is now active in the migrants' rights movement in Mexico and says that the U.S. plays a big role in the violence suffered by Central American migrants.
Many of these migrants have lived in the United States. They have their families, and many have children who are U.S. citizens. They are not only deporting Mexicans because of these racist and xenophobic policies, but also many Central Americans. These men and women are parents of children in the U.S., and the only thing they are doing is crossing through Mexico to arrive to the United States. But unfortunately, many are victims to extortions, kidnappings, and rape. The Mexican state has done nothing to protect and guarantee their human rights.
Human Rights Watch recently released a report about forced disappearances in Mexico, highlighting 250 cases in which state security and military forces played a role. Activist Ruben Figueroa says this grim situation means more people must join the fight for migrants' rights.
We can't be indifferent in front of the pain suffered by others. If they are Central Americans, migrants, women, children, homosexuals, we have to be responsible and always fight so that human rights are respected.
The Mesoamerican migrant movement is currently working on 1,000 cases of missing migrants. The group hopes they will be able to reunite more families with their loved ones this year. Indulgenol, FSRN, Veracruz.
In Colorado, state lawmakers are considering a package of gun control bills that would strengthen background checks, limit high-capacity magazines, and ban concealed weapons on campuses. The measures have provoked emotional debate in a state that has experienced 2 high-profile mass shootings, one last year at a movie theater and another at Columbine High School in 1999. As in other states, the gun control bills are drawing resistance from Republicans and the gun industry. FSRN's Jim Pullen brings us the story.
At the Capitol in Denver, the first of 4 Democrat-sponsored gun control bills cleared the House this week and now await action in the Senate. Senate President John Morse says there is a clear moral imperative that requires action now.
Newtown is what, in my view, really changed the world because of the horrificness of using a military-style assault weapon against a six-year-old. And certainly, you know, taking one into a theater and cranking off more than 70 rounds so that you could hit 70 people, killing 12 of them, was also, how did this poison get into our system?
The 4 bills that passed in the House would limit gun magazines to 15 rounds, require background checks for all gun purchases, make gun permit applicants pay a fee for background checks, and keep concealed guns out of college campus buildings. A few Democrats joined Republicans in voting against each bill. State Representative Claire Levy is the campus gun bill sponsor. Her bill would add campus buildings to the list of places where guns are forbidden, like courtrooms, and so bypass a Colorado Supreme Court ruling last year that allowed concealed carry on campuses. She's concerned about the use of guns in suicides.
That actually is one of my main concerns about having guns on campus. At this age group, suicide is the third leading cause of death.
Other proposals would require mental health professionals to report people they consider dangerous, require better training for concealed carry permit holders, and make manufacturers and others liable for misuse of guns. Another proposal addresses an often overlooked issue, the number of gun deaths associated with domestic violence. According to a report from the Violence Policy Center, nearly 600 women were shot and killed by male intimates in 2010. Federal and state law already makes it illegal for people convicted of domestic abuse and under restraint orders to possess guns. Senator Evie Hudak, who represents North Denver suburbs, is going to offer a bill that will strengthen state law. She says it's a bill she's wanted to introduce for a long time.
When I was teaching at Barnes Business College, what happened was we were told that one of my students had a restraining order against somebody. He was stalking her, and we should be on the lookout and be careful to protect her. And then she dropped out of school, and a few weeks later, she was found to have been murdered. He shot her to death.
While Levy and Hudak would like bipartisan support, no Republicans have voted for gun control measures. Republican Senator Greg Brophy represents much of eastern Colorado. He says that while he might support the domestic violence bill, the others go too far.
The problem is that these Democrats are such anti-gun extremists that they attach horrible conditions to every idea that they come up with, which usually result in people being less safe, not more safe.
About 1,000 people attended a pro-gun rally at the Capitol earlier this month, one of two recent demonstrations. One of those attending was Victor Head from Pueblo, Colorado. He repeated the gun industry claim that lawmakers want to take away his constitutional rights.
Yeah, I think they're fundamentally wrong. They don't understand what the Second Amendment and what our framers and forefathers intended with it. They bring hunting into the equation, sporting. It has nothing to do with it. It is for protection from tyranny from the government.
But some constitutional law experts say the bills are modest in scope and don't violate the Second Amendment. Richard Collins is a law professor at the University of Colorado.
Now, I know the opponents invoke the Second Amendment, but they are interpreting it for themselves, not the way the courts say. So,
Collins says that the current proposals would likely be held up in court if challenged.
The bills that have been introduced are probably valid. It's hard for me to see any one of them so far that would not be. The general take of the Colorado's appellate courts has been that the right gives you a right to have guns in your house to defend yourself, defend your house and your family. But once you go out on the road, you're subject to reasonable regulation.
The four bills that are in the Senate will test whether Democrats can keep their membership together on gun control laws. Their sponsors will rely on almost complete party line support to send them to Democratic Governor John Hickenlooper. Hickenlooper has said he will support at least the 15-round magazine and the background check fee bills. Jim Pullen, FSRN, Boulder.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapchi, Janine Etter, and Aquila Lewis. Our theme music was composed and produced for FSRN by Alan Weatherhead. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. For more news stories, specials, and our documentaries, visit our website, fsrn.org, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fsrn. Thanks for listening in Los Angeles. I'm Dorian Marina.